So I'm going to start with a story that that woman wrote in. Okay, my husband likes to make comparisons. When he was single, he constantly did this, and he has continued to do so with everything I do. This challen is great, but a challen I had at my cousin's Afraf Shabbos 2 years ago was even better. You look wonderful, almost as good as you did in that other outfit. Now some of you may think like, nobody says this, right? So, okay, fine. I had an enjoyable time in this morning's conversation. The last time that it was more enjoyable was 3 months ago. Our son brought home a good report card, but it wasn't as good as his younger brother's. No matter what I do, I feel like I'm being rated and judged. My husband has a fantastic memory. Professionally, his ability to remember facts and to make comparisons and trends has made him financially successful. But only those who are very confident and secure can cope with him. His constant measuring and judging make a lot of people uneasy. He isn't mean or cruel, but his awesome memory and automatic comparison can be devastating. I've tried to point this out to him on numerous occasions, but he argues, I don't do this on purpose. My mind automatically compares anything I see or do with anything similar. I do this to myself all the time. I enjoy it and gain from it too. After I daven, I compare today's Shemona Esrei with the previous one. I compare my learning and creative ideas with previous experiences. I compare the amount of time something takes me with the time these things took previously. I find that this enables me to keep improving myself in all areas of life. But I find it highly distressful, I said to him. Well, do you find it equally distressful all the time, or is it getting better or worse? He asked. I really don't care, I responded. Just stop it. But I can't stop it, he replied. My brain just happens to work this way. So I said, at least keep your comparisons to yourself when it comes to me and anything I do. That will be difficult, he responded. Then you can compare each time whether it's more difficult or less difficult than other times, I suggested. Each time you control yourself, you're fulfilling the mitzvah of not causing pain to others. Count how often you do this. Compare the number of times you do this each day of the week. Eventually, you can make yearly comparisons. While I said this as a half a joke, I knew it would appeal to my husband. He agreed, and since then, he has turned this comparison game into a one-man game of solitaire. Right? So, I think it's a great story, because sometimes we don't even realize either they're doing it, the husbands are doing it, or we, the wives, are doing it, and we're getting into some sort of thing that we don't even realize. It's just the way I am. Okay, so can I shift it or not? I have to come up with another game. My wife jokes, or I tell her that when it comes to driving, so those of you know we have a long drive, so when it comes to driving, my kids always say, like, you know, Abba drives a lot faster, because I'm a New Yorker. She's from LA, so that's by nature I'm a New Yorker, but I also drive as if it's a video game. So if you may have husbands like this, certainly if they're East Coast husbands, they will oftentimes drive like it's a video game, and you have to know this. Like, my wife would be like, where are you going? I'm like, what do you mean? I have to get in front of that car. It's like extra points, you know? Like, if you ever notice Waze will have points if you do certain things. Like, for what purpose? Who cares about the points? There are guys that care about the points. I don't know why, but they do. but it's just like totally different styles that we had, and recognizing those styles of actually how they work. Okay, now we begin. What we need to be at our A game. What do we need to do to be at our A game? So, now some of you, and I wrote different parts about this. We don't like to be hungry. Okay? When we come home, we generally like to eat. Rabbi Orlowick said many years ago, he came to us for I think it was a Shabbos or a Shir he gave us, and he said, husbands, and he was saying this like, sound like a joke, but he says, husbands, pack an apple in your lunch and leave it in the car. So when you come home, you're not ravenous and attacking the fridge or everything else. Do something. Now I know some of your husbands don't eat. I get it. But first, before we get to those husbands. So number one is that men like to be fed. It sounds ridiculous and very trite, but they like to not have to worry about this particular thing. So this was what Orlowick said. I think he says, I remember listening to this year, it probably was like 12 years ago. so the husbands cannot focus on their family because they're just focusing on eating. Sometimes they're not even hungry. It's just their way to get to things. Some husbands who might be stick skinny don't eat. They don't care for it. They're not much eaters. They usually like a sweet or two, something like that. But I will tell you, almost every guy, find out something that they like to have. Keep a listening ear when they go to other people's homes. Get the recipe, copy it exactly, so you can actually give it to them. Now, do either your husbands like to eat anything?
Cookies. Cookies,
right? So if they're thick skinny, they usually like some sort of sweet. If they're not thick skinny, they like everything. You know, it really depends on the hour of the day of whatever it is, right? Sometimes, for those that are stress eaters, some of your husbands might be stress eaters, you have to know how to deal with their stress and what, you know, what they're doing. Sometimes they just need to be hooked on a particular food or tea or something so that can actually take them away from actually having to eat. You know, it's funny, I spoke to a number of even Russia colon that they know they struggle. And they're, one of their greatest struggles is that they're eating too late at night because they're just stress eating. Either tired or stress eating, they're just eating late at night. You can try to see if you're going to be able to get them to cut that down. It's not so simple to get them to cut that down unless you're like a partner with that. How about we both will stop eating by 10 o'clock, right? Some of you are like, 10 o'clock, I'm already asleep. But there are a lot of people that are not even close to asleep and they're on their 12th snack already at that hour. So just keep this in mind. Food becomes a big issue in different homes. But the men usually appreciate it when a wife will go ahead and prepare something that they know that they like, not on a daily basis, not even a weekly basis, but something that says, I was thinking about you, and I know this is an important thing for you. So you make it for them. And make it with a statement so they actually feel that level of appreciation. My wife knew that for some reason I had a craving for Chinese food, hot and sour soup. So when people were making us meals after the baby, so someone asked us, what do you want? So I said, okay, maybe I'll get one hot and sour soup, which will be about this big of a container, right? And other things with family. They showed up with three containers of hot and sour soup, this big, which nobody else in the family ate. And then my family wondered where it was going. I was like, I don't know, I just enjoy this. This is ridiculous. So over like a week period, I ate all three of these jars of hot and sour soup. And then when it came time for my siyum, we made a siyum on whatever was ksubos, so my wife ordered the food again. Like, I didn't really care. I wasn't even in the mood for it, but it was so touching that she thought of something, even in a food-related thing, that had value to me, something that I enjoyed. That to me was considered touching. So as silly as it sounds, and as some of you, food may have no value to you, but for guys, it does have value. Even if it's a little sweet here and there, but it's just something, it actually shows that level of value. So something to keep in mind when it comes to food. Any questions on food? No. Next. Whatever we do outside, the greatest praises come from you. The most meaningful praise that we can have in anything that we do in life is going to come from you. No matter what we do in life, even if we run a major company, we're Rosh Yeshiva, we support thousands of people, we need you to make us feel special. And when husbands don't actually get this at home, they tend to look for it elsewhere. They need to feel great accolades from somebody. So if you look at the big picture people who got divorced recently, like in the non-Jewish world, these billionaires and things like that, so everyone's praising them. They're not really spending time with their spouses, with their wives, but eventually they get inflated with their egos as to why they're so great, and they're really getting their accolades from outside. They're not getting from inside. When husbands don't get it home, they tend to look for it elsewhere. This doesn't mean from a znus standpoint, but it means that they're looking for people to praise them on a regular basis. They can look towards their employees, their students, their clients, to feel wanted and accepted. And this is a natural thing that will happen. So it's very important that a wife goes and praises as much as she can. We're not talking about in a scenario where the wife doesn't feel listened to. We're not talking about those scenarios where the husband has a long day or short day at work, whatever it is that they do, and the wife goes to praise him for the experiences that he's been through and connects to him more. It's really important for us to feel that from our spouses. So what this means is oftentimes asking questions about work, such as what were some of your successes today or any frustrating experiences today. Keep in mind, sometimes a husband might come home with pressure at work or a negative experience and doesn't want to express it to the home, but the stress is going to leak out. And you may not know why they're being stressed, but it's being leaked out. And they need to feel some sort of connection. Someone needs to be able to catch them. I'll sometimes be like, but I need him to catch me. I need him to be there for me. Maybe so. But he is going to need to be caught by somebody. So it's important that you realize that sometimes the stresses that are being placed on the family are oftentimes not coming from you or from the kids. They're coming from external experiences, but no one was there to be able to hold my hand through it. No one's there to understand the pressures that I went through, and I need you to be able to do that. So recognizing that stress is important, even if you can't fix it. It's a big part of connection. As we know, the pasuk says, "Al kein ya'azov ish es av ezimo v'davik b'ishto," in the beginning of Bereishis, right? Per Dalet. So a man leaves his mother and father, v'davik b'ishto, which means that there's a natural inclination everyone has towards connection. It's just how we develop that connection, either to my parents or to my spouse. But there's this need for connection that's always going to flow. And so we hope that in a proper transition, it goes from parent to spouse. Unfortunately, I've seen some weird cases where one spouse is just still connected to their parent and can't bring the husband in or can't bring the wife in to the experience. But the goal is that they should be able to have a disconnect because they have a new connection. But it's so important. I can't even stress it enough how much a husband needs to hear the greatest praises coming from their wife, more than anybody else. Any comments? Come on, nothing?
Well said.
Okay.
I was just thinking about, there's times though that he wants like space rather than like,
That's correct. There are times that he wants space, but you have to, everyone's going to be a little bit different. For the most part, many husbands will need space when they come home and there's too much going on. They just need some headspace. We usually call that base measures, right? That sometimes helps them get some of that headspace. You know, like, lahavdil, in the non-Jewish world, it's like, I'm going bowling with the guys. In the Jewish world, it's like, I'm going to go with the base measures. Even if he's going to go learn and really let him, you know, totally focus on learning, but it gives him that clarity of headspace. So that is necessary. But that does not take away from the fact that he needs praises, you know, and he needs. But and sometimes those praises, like he's stuck because someone else is bothering him. Something's really eating up, you know. And sometimes they can let it go. Sometimes they can't let it go. And to be able to just say, like, you know, you look a little stressed out. Do you need some time alone, or do you want to talk about it? That could be, you know, different approaches as to how it actually works. let me just see if I can address that over here. this is I consider this a good one. You can laugh all you want. You're going to need to tell me things about my hygiene and my dress. As much as a man wants to dress appropriately, he's not so focused on it all the time. Examples: beard dandruff. Okay, right. My wife will oftentimes tell me to do this, or she'll do it to myself. Deodorant. Stained clothing or unmatched clothing. Now, some of you say, like, what's wrong with it? Okay, I think it's a big deal. Figure out a way to ask or mention that it needs to be cared for. Okay? By the way, did you notice, you can't wear that suit. It doesn't look good on you. Okay? Just say it straight up. Suggest, you know, since women usually focus on these things, I'll be happy to tell you when you're not looking presentable to the outside world. It's important to present ourselves to the outside world in a sense of regality. That's who we are. I think it's a big deal. Some of you may do this already, but I think this is a big deal. my wife tells me many times, like, I just, you know, too many rabbis I see that, you know, black suit that's full of sprinkles across the whole thing, you know? So, like, I'm like, that's why men should wear white suits, but it's, like, not a, in a sense of purity, whatever. other issues, right? So, but it's a constant thing that, you know, certainly men who are stroking their beards a lot, they're going to end up getting some sort of beard dandruff. Don't look at me, please. Okay, I'll keep cleaning periodically, you know? but these are things, I'll tell you, I've met too many married men, who have the most putrid breath I've ever smelled in my life. Okay, I'm talking to them in conversation, and I'm just like, my eyes are tearing. Just from these things, or they reek of sweat and things like that. And sometimes I'm almost at the level like, I have to tell you. I got to tell you. But I have never brought myself to that level to tell someone like, do you need to borrow any deodorant? You know, I've never said it. Do you want, you know, a Listerine strip or anything like that? Who's going to tell them if not you? Right? Nobody's going to, certainly the married men, nobody's going to tell them unless you're going to tell them. So I can only tell you that men don't always think about these things. Usually women do. Maybe there are women that don't always think about these things. But there has to be a way that women have to tell us, you know, we need to take care of yourself. There has to be a sense of reality. Look at the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch writes, I think it's Chai Adam also, that part of the things that you have to do in the morning is you have to wash out your mouth. It's like brushing your teeth. How can you daven to Hashem with a smelly breath? I never understood the question. Like, Hashem's not smelling my breath, but ultimately, how can we do this if your breath smells? Which means that the general level of hygiene, of regality that a person has in order to present themselves. So, as much as we'd like to show that we really have it all and everything's put together, there are things that we're just not put together with. Some men are, we call those the Marines, you know, like they make their bed perfectly every day and everything is set and they know exactly what they're doing. If your husband's a Marine, he probably doesn't have bad breath, right? Most of us are not Marines, and therefore we just need a little bit more guidance sometimes on these things, especially mismatched soup. I had to just double check before I got here, mismatched soup, because you can never tell. Sometimes you're like, it's all blue, you can't tell, right? It's never. Remember, if it's a jacket, then it usually has like, you know, those one of those suede elbows, you know. Then, but otherwise, like I did it. I came to school once because I left my jacket on the chair, and then whenever I got, you know, when I came home, so then I took it, the other jacket was somewhere else. I pulled the jacket thinking that was on. Came to school and I was just so embarrassed. I don't know if the girls noticed. I noticed maybe because I care about these things. Many times, guys do not notice at all. They have no clue. But a wife wants their husband to look regal, and he should look regal. Especially if he's a Ben Torah, certainly he should present himself in such a way that he has a sense of regality. Perhaps it's more of like a European look, but there's a sense of regality that you are an embodiment of Torah. And I used to have posted in my house a Rambam that discusses this idea. The Rambam discusses that it's usher for you, a Talmud Chacham, to have a stain on his clothing. It's a bizayim for a Talmud Chacham to have a stain on his clothing. You can't walk around this way. And yet, unfortunately, sometimes you see people that are just too aloof, and they just have, like, stains all over the place. I remember one person told me that he left the rabbinate. For whatever reason, he left the rabbinate. But he said, I couldn't help but change my jacket every 15 minutes because my baby would spit up my shoulder every 15 minutes about this. But the Rambam seems to say that you have to be very careful as to how you dress and how you present yourself. And I'm assuming every one of your husbands here has a sense of reality. They're Ben Torah, and they present themselves in such a way, so I think it's a big deal. It doesn't mean you're going to go home and, you know, tell them, like, you know, we're taking all your stuff to the cleaners, we're dumping these things. But it does mean that we need your help. It just means a little bit of help. I'm not saying it's exciting if someone comes over to me to do this to me, namely my wife, right? But nonetheless, I know I have to present myself, and I can't look like I have salt and pepper, like, on my clothing. Okay? Any questions or comments? Nothing.
If the spouse doesn't care so much about specific things, is it like, is there a
boredom? Spouse meaning the wife or the husband?
The husband doesn't care so much. Like, I don't want to just be nagging. I'll say something once. He's an adult. If he chooses to do something about it, it's up to him.
It's hard to say. I'll tell you like this. Meaning, like, when it comes to dirty clothing, so dirty clothing, it's like it's not appropriate.
You're working in the kitchen all day, like,
I understand. So, meaning bring it. If you're going to go to shul and you're going to daven, is it appropriate to daven with dirty clothing? Right? So technically, no. Okay, it's the only meaning you have. So bring a shirt. Bring your davening shirt, you know? Like some people have, like, their davening jackets. You know, bring that. And my hat is, like, a little bit stained, so it's slightly embarrassing, but I have this feeling that, like, maybe nobody notices it, just me. Right? Like, it's rubbed out. But, like, you see people come to shul and their hats are, like, you know, decimated. You know, it was, like, crushed under, like, the car seat, the baby's car seat with Cheerios rubbed all over it and all these different things. They come to shul, they put this hat on the dom, and you're like, I'm not sure the kavod here, I'm missing something, you know. But, like, they're wearing a hat for davening. Is that, like, the ideal? I don't know. But there is a regality to it. So when it comes to clothing, So there has to be some element, you know, it could be Israelis might be different, you know. But I still think that there's a regality that we need to present ourselves. And if we're not going to understand it, let our wives say, you know what, you are a melech. A melech must present himself this way. And most of these things that I listed over here, beard, dandruff, deodorant, stained clothing, unmatched clothing, are not for them. They could care less, you know. It's everyone else that smells it, right? Bad breath is bad for somebody else, not for me. Right, that's usually how it is. So I think it's an important thing that we have to just be a little bit more mindful of. That helps us become better at who we are. Okay. sometimes there are things that you do that frustrate me. Ready?
No. Sorry.
Right. Ready for this one? Sometimes there are things that you do that frustrate me. Please don't make me your task rabbit. I like to help, but I need a framework to get things done, and I'm usually busy. When you get stressed because you do so much, you may tend to offload on me to get things done. I know you're juggling a lot. This is the husband speaking. And I would never ever be able to do what you do. Now, I think most husbands, if they had to switch the role, and usually happens once in a while, wife goes out of town, you need to take care of certain things, husband, and it's just like, I don't want this, come back, I don't want to do this. So we know that what you do is intense and immense, and you juggle a tremendous amount. This is part of what Bini Yaseira is about, the ability to multitask. Whereas men cannot really multitask, women have a greater ability to multitask on the concept of Bina Yesera. we tend to be more hyper-focused on things where you can actually juggle 1,000 things at once, which is remarkable. We cannot do it. So when we come home and you start throwing things at us to do, we drop the ball on each one of those. Can I just make dinner and start the laundry and just do this? And it's like, I'm done. I gotta go. You know, my chavrus has just called. He needs to learn early, you know. So when it's task after task that's given to me, it doesn't make me feel wanted. It makes me feel like a handyman that doesn't get paid or appreciated. This is a real deal. And some of you may say, I never give my husband any handyman tasks. He's actually pretty bad at being a handyman. But it means the general tasks that we have to do. You know, going to the cleaners, doing other things, picking up this, picking up that. So asking us, like, on our way home, it's helpful. But when we walk in the door and we become the handyman, and then it's like we become underappreciated in these things. I didn't put it over here, but it's an important thing. My wife started many, many years ago. For those with kids, that you, and even without, that the wife tries to stand up for the husband when he comes into the room. It feels awkward if you've never done it before. So for my high school students, I trained for them. Postpartum is usually easier. Usually. I don't know if it is, you know. But you stand up for your husband when he comes into the room. Technically, the husband should do the same for the wife. Kind of falls out of favor after a certain point, but it has to be something that transfers over to the children. But there's a certain sense of honor that's accepted there, and that even if you're not, let's just put it this way, it's something that is appreciated, and it's not meant to feel overly like I'm lording over you. It just shows you have a sense of respect. It's something that's a nice thing to be able to do. Obviously, it's best if both spouses can do, but really the obligation is on the wife to stand up for the husband. I'm not pushing you to do it, but you want to be able to get your children to do that, certainly. No question to be able to do that. The best way to start is if you do it, that creates that formality for them that they recognize is an important thing. Now, some of you may say, that is too weird. That's like 1700s. But I see it with my students that it's a huge change in their respect for their parents. Once that we put them on that task, as we learned in 12th grade, Kibbutz Avaim, once we put them on that task of standing up for their parents, a huge change happens almost immediately with the respect that they actually have for their parents and the way that they're just standing up for them. That's something you want to be able to give over to your children and even do for yourselves. It's something that's actually very helpful. It's not, again, it's not in any reason to show any lording or one over the other, but it shows that you're able to put him on a pedestal. And like I said before, we need praise. That's just who we are. We need praise. It's not necessarily a gaiva thing, but it's this deep connection that we have when we feel that and we have this respect. So when it's task after task, it doesn't make me feel so wanted. It makes me feel like a handyman that doesn't get paid or appreciated. So you can ask me like this. When will you have a few minutes to take care of a few things around the house? Or can I ask you to take care of a few things around the house? So when you get stressed because you are juggling many, many things you have to do and you start offloading them, you can do them better than we can. Some of them obviously we can physically do better, but to be able to offload one after the other, it tends to get frustrating on us. And then we just go like, okay, I'll do it. I'm just going to slip away so she doesn't ask me any more things to do before she just loads off, you know, some more things upon me. Let's hear some points on that. Anybody? Come on. Just don't make this a one-sided show.
Aside from standing up, what other things can you do to show respect in that vein?
I guess a big thing is not interrupting. When people speak, it's really both sides, husband and wife, not interrupting. Many of us grew up with interrupting. And our excuse is that the reason why we interrupt is two reasons. One is makes them more labedic. We're in a part of a conversation. That's it. We're all involved. That's number one. And the second thing why we interrupt is because we might have come from a larger family and we were not heard. Or we came from a small family and we were not heard. So we interrupted. And therefore, we interrupt as well. So if we can figure out a way to not interrupt, it's a big deal. one of the things, like, you've probably experienced this with yourself, you're sharing someone a story about an incident that happened with you, and they go, the same thing happened to me. And you're in mind going, I don't care about you. This is about me right now. I parked my car over there. You're not going to believe what happened. You too, I also. Oh, I've just neglected you entirely. Right? So that's a big issue that we see today that people do all the time. It's this comparison, story comparisons. You just had surgery? Let me tell you the surgery I just had. Right? And it doesn't help people because we're not able to take them in. So many times we're trying to connect with people to show them a story that we have, and we just totally left them out in the cold. We didn't take them in. So part of that is not interrupting. Part of that is being able to, you know, to accept them for whenever they're telling you something over. One of the things, I gave a class on it a few weeks ago. I don't know, some of my students were very happy with it. Maybe it was last year's Shabbaton that we discussed about active constructive listening. and just to be a great listener, it requires you to not just focus with your eyes, but really to have all your mannerisms available for the person. Like, if you've ever been to a class and you're a nodder, anybody here a nodder? Not, you know, yeah. Right? Like, when you're a nodder, the speakers love it, right? Speakers, and you go, we're like, thank you, somebody understands. And the people are just like this, and they're taking it in, but they don't get it, you know? But if you're a nodder, especially if you're one of those people, then it's like gold for any speaker, you know? That's why they say that all people love going to, like, these Christian things where the pastor's speaking and it's like, preach on, you know, all these things. Like, they love it because of the fact that they're getting, like, this constant feedback. You know, in a shir, you don't get it. It was interesting because in Valley Torah, they were saying, like, after whoever speaks, don't clap. Stand up for them. Show respect. Right? But there's a feeling when you're clapping with the person's taking in. When you're standing up for the person, it's irrelevant whether I liked what you had to say or not. I'm just showing respect. So there is this way that when we can listen to somebody else and really take them in and really get them. I told you this, you heard it probably half a dozen times already, that I was reading this book from an FBI negotiator. And it's basically about communication. So he says that instead of saying, you never want to get the person to say, you're right. You want to get them to say, that's right. Said that there's a distinction between you're right and that's right. So he said he first started working for a suicide hotline. That's where they put him on before joining the FBI as a hostage negotiator. And he was talking with somebody. And this was his first call. And he was telling him why it's important to live and all these things. And he said, you're right. And you have so much going. He said, you're right. You're right. And he hung up the phone with the guy. And he went to the boss. And he's like, how was? He goes, worst call I ever heard in my life. You totally botched the whole thing. What do you mean? The guy was totally on par with me. No, they were just agreeing with you to get you off the phone. You didn't hear them at all. You were just telling them information, and that's why they said, you're right, you're right, you're right. But when they say that's right, that means you understood them. So many times in communication, you say to a person, so let me just get this straight. This is what happened to you at work. This is the thing. That's right. Means now you understood me. That's right. Sometimes when people call me for a halachic question, I say, let me just repeat it back to you to make sure that I have it right in the question that you're actually asking. So they can tell me, yes, it's okay, or no, I need to modify for some of the things they're actually asking. So part of that communication is that general level of respect. Getting the kids to respect them as well is also important. You know, when you're talking about your kids, if your husband comes home, you know, you have to run to the door and greet Abba. Okay, we also have it implemented in our house. I tell my kids the other day, it's not working as well as we wanted, but that you don't start eating before Imar Abba. So how does it work in our house? Can I start eating before you? Right? So I tell my kids, you know, you always ask, which is beautiful, can I start eating before you? But probably once a week, you should not eat until we eat. Just because otherwise, it just becomes a thing I do. I ask you, I eat. Never do I actually wait. So my daughter said, well, the truth is, we always wait Friday night. So my other daughter said, no, that's because he has the challah first. Right? But I said, no, but then by this dish we wait. That's because you brought it to him first. That's not right. So each thing. But it's to get to the point that that they have that respect, and the wife has that similar level of respect for the husband. There also has to be that it's important for a wife always that her husband is placed on a pedestal. When she values what he does, no matter what it is, if he makes shoelaces, it's like, wow, you are the best shoelace maker. It doesn't matter. She has to be able to value her husband because that gives her pride in him, and that helps her find more accolades. Also, by the way, it's important if you have a gratitude journal. Anybody here gratitude journaling type of people? No? So I'm not into it. I can't do it. I tried a couple times. It doesn't work for me. But we have a whiteboard on our fridge, a small little whiteboard about this size, a little bigger, and it just says, and my wife put it up, today I'm grateful for, and there's numbers. Everyone gets a number, and she was very good, like every day, putting a new one down. We kind of fell off. But once a week, we'll put things down, things that I'm grateful for. And if there was an experience of something that you had, you put on the board. So if we had a great Shabbaton, I'll put on a great Shabbaton, at least something that I can see. It develops a gratitude thing that's aside from the praise, but it's something that's definitely helpful, and it doesn't require a journal, book, this whole thing you can look over. It's like, you can erase the board, you know, next week or tomorrow, whatever it is. But it's certainly a helpful thing that gets you in a more positive thing. But it's very important that a wife really appreciates what her husband does, no matter what it is. And sometimes it comes with asking. Just ask. So, what is that you did? That's what I said. What are some of the successes you had today? One of my life coach always says to me, before we start, I've said this to you, before we start, what are some news and goods that happened in your life today? Or this week, or whatever. News and goods. Because when we're overburdened by stress of things that are not going well the way we want it to go well, all we can think about are all the negative things that happen in our life. But if you're forced to think about new and good things, then it actually lessens the pain of all the negative things that are actually going on in life. And it makes it's a remarkable trick. It's an unbelievable trick that works on your brain. Even if you want to, I have to discuss this major, major thing. Okay, you can. Let's first discuss what's new and good in your life. I think it has a huge impact, and that will enable you to actually have greater clarity. Okay. Any other questions or thoughts on that? Okay, Onas Dvarim, saying things that you know will annoy the other person. So in here he actually has a story about that. Whenever I would comment, this is from Mary Pliskin, whenever I would comment that something bothers me, my spouse would respond, I don't see why this should bother you. It doesn't bother me. I kept arguing that every human being is different. Our Torah obligation to be sensitive to individual likes and dislikes of the other person, even though our own portfolio of likes and dislikes might be totally different. I said, but if it doesn't bother me, most likely it doesn't bother the vast majority of normal people. If you have a reaction that is abnormal, that's not my problem, he said. Well, he says my spouse. I don't know if it's a man or woman speaking. I would try and get my spouse to see the individual sensitivities and irritations and that irritations need to be respected, but to no avail. When I was growing up, said my spouse, if any of my siblings would be bothered by something that didn't bother anyone else, we were told, you need to learn to live with this. Everyone's life has potential irritants. The more you learn to accept them, the better off you'll be in life. Finally, one day, my spouse heard something that was convincing. In a lecture that I attended, he said, okay, now we know it was him, I heard that the laws of Onas Dvarim are subjective. Even if you wouldn't mind if someone said a certain thing to you, it's forbidden to say it to someone else who wouldn't want it to be said. This illustrates that in all areas of interpersonal relationships, an individual's reactions are the key factor in whether they are acceptable or not. As some say, perception is reality. Since then, my spouse has stopped saying, if it doesn't bother me, it shouldn't bother you. Rather, if it bothers me, my spouse tries to stop saying or doing it. Sometimes you'll get from the outside where someone's going to actually do that. But that means that don't do things that are going to annoy the other person with your words. I don't want to give any examples that are major here. Here I wrote one example. This will oftentimes come up not only in spousal relationships, like, you know, you're always waking up late, right? Or you're always doing this, or why are you doing this? So those can be annoying because they haven't been able to figure it out for themselves. This will also oftentimes come up with parenting as well. When one reacts to a child and the spouse says, don't talk that way to the child. Don't talk that way to him or her. There needs to be a better way to convey your message over so it doesn't feel like it's onos dvarim that you're attacking the other person. So I don't have other examples that I give you. If you have examples, the best way for you to give an example is what somebody else does to somebody else you know. That's the best way if you have any examples of onos dvarim. But again, saying something that could potentially be hurtful and you know it bothers them, you have to be extra careful to not actually say these things over. Any thoughts? Any examples? Come on, you all have an example. Everybody has an example. Next, moving on. emotions. Again, this is under the chapter heading of This Frustrates. For some, their wives are too emotional. For others, they're not emotional enough. If you find yourself emotionally overwhelmed by incidents in your life, make sure your husband is a good sounding board. Sometimes they aren't. Sometimes they're very meticulous, they're very pragmatic, and they quote-unquote don't have time to deal with the emotions. Now, it doesn't mean that they don't have time. It means they don't want to deal with it. Perhaps they're overwhelmed, or they're frustrated that it's repeating itself over and over again, and we're not getting to points of resolution. But you have to make sure they're a good sounding board. If he is a good sounding board, tell him, I had a really frustrating experience. Can you be a listening ear for me? I'm not asking you to fix anything. Just hear me out. We all need to have this sense of comfort. The other person is hearing us. Even men need it, women need it, everybody needs it to know that the other person is actually listening and not trying to fix. We do know often that men often try to fix situations. Sometimes it happens the other way as well. But you need to be able to say, don't fix, just hear me out. Or, I need a better perspective on this issue. Can I share it with you? So if you put it in that framework, then you're not just offloading. Sometimes you're offloading because you just can't take it. You have to ask yourself the toelis in this offload. Let's say a person's frustrated at their own parents. So how do they offload this to their husband? What's your goal of doing this? Is your goal so your husband can also rank out your parents? No, that's not a goal, right? So your goal is that I need to be heard and comforted. And someone needs to hear me and comfort me. So that's why you say, I'm not looking for someone to fix. I just want you to hear me out. I also wouldn't mind if you have a different perspective on this. This can help me in being able to process the way I deal with things with my mother, with my father, with whomever that I'm dealing with. I could really use a better perspective on this issue. Tell me why I'm so bothered. It's another way. Tell me why I'm so bothered by this whole thing. And this way it puts us in a better framework as opposed to trying to fix. We're realizing, like, okay, you want to be taken in, you want to be comforted, and perhaps you want a new perspective so we can deal with this better going forward, so we can understand your mother, your father, whomever, in order to help you gather your thoughts and deal with it appropriately. If you are a non-emotional type, that may mean that he is the emotional type. Anybody here fit in that category? Yeah? Okay? So it may mean that he's more emotional. Sometimes they come to an equal footing where you're like totally structured. You don't have time for emotions right now. Like, you know, just pick up the slack, grow up, let's move on. We're not, come on, I don't have time for this. So if you're the non-emotional type, that may mean that he's the emotional one. So when he wants to unload, figure out if you can be in his headspace at that time. Many times, as a wife, you can't. You can't because you're juggling too much, you have a lot on your head, and you just want him to get over it. You want him to get over it. And he's not getting over it. Can you get over it? Like, it's done already. The guy said this to you, it's fine, move on. Like, move on, you're a good person, move on. Can we move on? No, you don't understand, like, it really affected me. Like, what did I marry here, right? But that's because of the fact that he's more emotional. You're less emotional in this whole experience. You may feel that he's so emotional, and this is the way I wrote it. You may feel he's so emotional. Get over it. I have 15 things to juggle, including breakfast, lunch, dinner, laundry, job one, job two, dealing with my parents, making sure I'm between everyone, cleaning up the house and everything else, and you had a problem with your boss at work? Like, try doing half of my jobs, and let's move on. Yeah? Either of you? No? Yeah? Yeah? Okay. Nonetheless, he needs you to be there for him. Yes, you are his rock. So he doesn't get too emotionally bogged down. You keep him on the straight and narrow. Certainly with positivity. Now again, if you're a wife like this, you're not necessarily strong-minded, you have a tremendous resilience. You can get knocked down and pick yourself back up easily. And it may be harder for him. And because of the fact that you don't get emotionally bogged down, you have to be able to remind him that, you know, you don't need to worry about this. I'll deal with this. I'll deal with this. You're a good person. But realize that you are his rock. Because many men, especially those that are very emotional and get hit by a lot of emotional things, they don't know how to process it very well. And therefore, it's a reminder that you are that strength for him. He needs to figure out how to process the hurt or the stress, or anything else. So if you shut him down, it doesn't work well with him. He doesn't know what to do with it. So what you can do is set a time to discuss with him and say, can we discuss this, you know, 8 o'clock? Let's have a clear conversation so I can give you total focus on it. At least he'll feel like, okay, she has time for me and she's going to spend that time with me to hear me out, even if she's just gonna nod and smile and whatever, and be looking in her head, she's thinking, "Fuck, this baby," you know. Like, even if you're thinking that, nonetheless, we might be the emotional type. Now, just to remind you, on the flip side of the coin, for you that are the emotional ones, you know, the husband might be saying the same thing, but meet the women who are the opposite side. Meet those women. So set a time to discuss with them. You know what? 8 o'clock. Let's discuss this. I want to hear you fully. I just have a lot to do in my head right now. I don't have the time right now. Let's set a time. If, let's say, there are other interferences, such as work, such as kids, such as your parents, whoever is that's there, suggest, why don't we go to another room? And it's better if he suggests it, by the way, because it's really pressing on him. So for him to just talk to you like while you're in the middle of doing things, it's annoying for you. I get it. It's annoying for you to actually do that. So say he, and you should tell him, going forward, it's best if we have a clear headspace. So he should really ideally say, can we talk in the other room for a minute? I just need to share something that really bothered me at work. So suggest that we go to another room so I can hear you out with any interruptions. And then this way you can actually be there. You could do your nodding, right? You can even get frustrated for them. It's important. It's a great technique as well. When they share something with you, whoever it is, and you just say, so frustrating. So frustrating. Now, most of the time, it doesn't help that much, but it's a little bit that you're frustrated for them. They're not alone in the frustration. You're acknowledging that the person's frustration is real, and I value that frustration. So it's so frustrating. You sat on the phone for 2 hours today with whatever, the health insurance. Oh, so frustrating. I can't believe I had to do that. It's so frustrating. And then move on to, wow, that's pretty amazing. That's intense resilience. I probably would have hung up after a half hour. I can't believe you did that. You know, praise them for who they are. So again, if you are one who is less emotional, they are the emotional one, you need to give them time because you're clearly going to be busy and you're not really interested because you want them to get over it. But if you can actually set the time for them, and even if they can't, if they need to do it now, so okay, then we need to go into a separate room. We need to be able to discuss this so I can actually be a good listening ear to you so I can help you figure this whole thing out. Okay, those are some things that frustrate me that I need you to help me for. Again, we have both sides of the coin. If you're the emotional one or if he's the emotional one, there's just different ways that we actually have to process it. It ultimately comes the same way. It's just being able to allow that person to know that you have full time for them. Sometimes when people call me, I say, you have my divided attention. Mm-hmm. You know, I can, if that's okay with you, I'm okay with it, but you have my divided attention. Like, you got my undivided attention, then I need to be this time, right? Lastly, I have is, I need you to help me boost my Torah learning. No matter what I'm learning in Torah, I need you to help me boost myself in it, because sometimes I don't feel like it's so important. Sometimes I have too many other things, whether it's work, and if work is non-Klei Kodesh, it doesn't make a difference. Klei Kodesh or non-Klei Kodesh work, it doesn't matter. I'm overtaken by all of these tasks that I have to do, and I need you to boost the value that I have in what I do to learn. Sometimes it means I need you to push me out of the house and say, look, I need you to go learn. I need it, you need it, the family needs you to go learn. Go out there. Take an hour, whatever the time is, I needed to go learn. if I feel like I didn't learn that well, or if I didn't learn that much, and I'm down on myself for that, just praise me and remind me how much my Torah learning it enhances our marriage and enhances our entire family. Just remind me of that on an ongoing basis. I'm not asking you to ask me what we learned, so I can tell you a whole intricate sugya of something. If there's anything that I can share, I'd be happy to share it with you. But I need you to remind me how important it is and that it changes my life and it changes our lives together. So I need you to be there for me when it comes to whatever Torah learning that I have. Just boost me up about it. Send me out of the house. Even if you need me, say, look, I need you to help out, but I need you to go learn as well. So I need you for 15 minutes because I want you to go learn. So please, instead of dealing with this and this, please take care of the learning. We need it as a family. And the Kedusha you bring has unbelievable levels you can't possibly imagine. So boost me with whatever Torah learning I'm doing. Make me feel proud of it. Make us feel Kadosh about the entire experience. Let me feel like this is the greatest thing in the world. Any thoughts? Okay, so we're just going to do a quick review. Quick review of what we had over here. Okay? We spoke about hunger. Okay, not going any further in that. the greatest praise will always come from you. No matter what we do outside the world, you are the greatest things to us. And therefore, however you praise us is going to be amazing. Praise us for the core components of who we are, not our clothing, not our hairdos. Praise us for everything that we represent and why you chose to marry us. We want to be able to hear about our successes. We want to be able to share some of the accolades that we have, even if we're not such a talkative person. We want to know that we're feeling loved and we're feeling great. Maybe you're asking about successes, maybe you're asking about frustration, but we need to be able to connect to you, and that's going to come through your praises of us. you're going to need to tell me about my hygiene and my dress, and sometimes I might get annoyed, but you have to tell me anyway. remind me that it's because of regality, and we're in Eved Hashem, and we're Bnei Torah. when it, also, extra elements of respect that you show also go a long way, even if we don't truly value it, or it sounds kind of weird for us, but standing up for us and praising us in ways really gives us an extra boost. Things that frustrate me, doing too many tasks, or too many tasks because you're overwhelmed, saying things that will annoy me, and becoming the emotional rock for me. Either that means you're listening to me a certain way, or I'm presenting myself, or I'm listening to you in a particular way. And lastly on that we have is boost my Torah learning, make me feel that whatever Torah that I do is the most amazing thing that's out there. We're going to stop here on the recording.